The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
He's a hometown kid who became a major league star. And now he's part of our broadcast family here in Atlanta. It's the Jeff Francoeur Show. Frenchie is only on The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.
Jeff Francoeur, as he does every Tuesday at 12:30, joining us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. Jeff, you said it the last time Duvall hit a bomb in Colorado. I know you weren't on the broadcast last night, but it appears as if he got cheated again. I think that ball went a little bit further than 483 feet.
Yeah, and I mean, look, it was, I mean, I tell you what, that concourse up there, I've never seen a ball go there. And, you know, I think he actually surprised himself, because you could hear him after the game kind of say, if I got anything more than that, I'll surprise myself. So what a game. It's exactly what the Braves needed. I love the lineup construction. I love moving it around. I know Snit had been tinkering with it, thinking about it for a little bit, and I'm glad he pulled the trigger, man. It was, you know, in San Fran, they were a little lethargic offensively, and he did something that got him going.
And I think what you see now is going to remain the same, not only as the lineup is constructed, but I think the outfield specifically. You're going to see Adam Duvall in center field, Rosario in left field, and Soler in right field, barring a game here or there. That's your primary outfield now, is it not?
It is, for sure. And, you know, I was talking to Brian McCann the other day, and he was talking about Rosario, saying those last couple of years that he played with, you know, the Astros and Yankees, I couldn't get the guy out. You know, he could flat hit, he can rake, he can hit to all parts of the field, and you're seeing it right now. And, you know, like I said, I love him being in that six hole, being able to split up the righty bats. I think that's big too. And you like it. You're back to a three-game lead now, exactly what you wanted to do.
Hey, Jeff, I'm not saying they're the same player, but I look at Michael Brantley, and I look at Eddie Rosario, and I go, you know what? You're not going to be talked about first. You're not going to be talked about second. You're not going to be talked about third. You're probably not going to be talked about fourth. But I'm glad I got you, because at a certain point in certain games, you could actually end up being the most important guy in the game. I think there are a couple of players that probably fit that mold, do they not?
Yeah, they do, and I think the Braves fans are finally getting to see what this guy's got, because I think a lot of people don't really, unless you pay attention to American League ball too, don't understand how good this guy's been. And like you said, it's kind of like Brantley. All of a sudden, you know, you look up during the playoffs last year, you're like, man, this guy hit 330 for the year,
right?
You know, and all he does is put good ABs together. And, you know, those pitchers, trust me, they know when they get to that six hole and there's a lefty in Rosario that they're going to have to make some pitches. They're going to get exposed.
I heard Snit after the game tell the truthful story of asking Adam Duvall about that shot. It's a guy that's been around baseball for 40-plus years. We all have heard the story. If you hit it really well, it doesn't feel like anything. But that had to be such a bomb that a guy who's been in the game 40-plus years just wanted to ask the guy on his own team who just did it. That'll tell you probably, you know, Snit needed a fun moment. I honestly believe he needed a fun moment. Last night felt like a fun moment for him.
A fun moment for him, the team. Like I said, to win a game like that, you know, and Chris, we talked the other day. I said, when you go to Arizona, you need three games like this out of four where just offensively you don't even leave it in the pitcher's hand for the Braves. You just score your runs and you do what you do. They've lost 100 games, the Diamondbacks. You know, their run differential, I think, now is over 200 or something like that. So, you know, the Braves did exactly what they did last night, and they need to do it again tonight.
Jeff Francoeur with us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line, and we keep talking about it week after week, it seems, Jeff, that third starter. Who is it now? Is it Ian Anderson if he pitches well tomorrow night?
I think these next couple starts for Ian are really important to solidify that third spot. You know, I truly do. I think, you know, Waskar, you know, he did okay last night. The slider right now for some reason's hanging, guys, and we're not seeing the depth of it that, you know, that we even saw to me when he first came back off the IL, that when he pitched against the Yankees and stuff, that you saw a real sharp slider. And for some reason, I don't know if it's Colorado did it, but ever since that start in Colorado, his two starts after, he's had trouble really being able to get bite on that pitch. And, you know, for him, if that's not going, he's in trouble. He's got to have that pitch. So I think it's a big start for Ian, and I think he needs to try to, you know, throw the ball well and get that third spot for the postseason.
We stopped talking about it, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but I also think some of the sticky stuff. I think there were just guys who, quite honestly, look, if you're really trying to figure out, maybe I think side sessions are for what do I do without it? I've got to come up with something. And maybe some guys just aren't figuring it out. Maybe he's one of those guys.
You know what? I think, Chris, there's a lot of guys. And I think, you know, at first when it happened, all the guys, you know, were probably, I'm sure, in panic mode trying to figure out. And I'm sure some guys have been able to make the adjustment. And like anything, some are not going to be able to. You know, I think that's going to be league-wide. So, you know, for him, it's just finding, like I said, getting that slider down in the zone because, you know, his fastball we know plays great, 96, 97 with lots of movement. But last night that slider was hanging a little bit, so hopefully to see him next time. But, you know, Ian Anderson with what he did last postseason to me with the three pitches, you know, he's your prototypical guy, I would think, for that third start.
And it looks like they're going to sink or swim with Will Smith as their closer. We saw him finally have a clean inning on Sunday. We saw a lot of fastballs being thrown. Tom Glavine talked about it during the broadcast. Nothing's ever that simple, but do you think you'll see more of that, him be more aggressive, Will Smith, with that fastball?
I do. I think there might have been a little talk, I think, behind closed doors about maybe changing up pitch selection. That's my whole thing. You know, when I sat there on the air and watched Will Smith, I said, it's not a matter of stuff. Guy's got tons of strikeouts. You know, you see him strike out some of the best players. My whole thing is the pitch selection. And when you keep throwing that slider in to righties, eventually, A, you're going to hang one, or B, like you saw with Solano that night in San Francisco, you know, you're going to see so many of them that eventually you're just going to be able to see it and hit it. And so I think that's the big thing for Will. Throw that slider in, but then throw that two-seamer away. And so that's, I think, the biggest thing. Pitch selection for him is going to be, to me, the main thing. You know, we talked about Richard Rodriguez throwing nothing but four-seamers. It's a little bit like that. If you're going to continuously throw one pitch, unless you're Mariano Rivera, you're going to get hit.
Jeff, it's just like people talk about tipping a pitch. You don't need to tip it. I know what's coming. Every piece of paper tells me what you're about to throw. It's the same as tipping a pitch.
Yeah, it looked like the first couple of batters in that game, the clean inning finally, weren't expecting those fastballs at all.
No, you could tell because I'll be honest, guys, if I – you know, if I faced Will Smith, I'd go up and sit slider the whole AB. And if you threw me anything else, you know, late in his career, I hit Brad Lidge pretty darn well because he had trouble throwing his fastball for a strike. It missed up all the time. So I'd go up there and literally sit on slider. And out of five pitches, I'd probably get three of them, and eventually I'd get a good one to hit. And I think it's the same thing. You saw that last night. Guys were sitting on that. So, you know, even Mariano Rivera had that cutter, but he could work the cutter in and out to both hitters. So it almost played as two pitches. So to me, you got to have another pitch.
Hey, Jeff, how possible is it for a guy later in his career? I don't care if he's a starter, but I'm really thinking about guys in the bullpen to start throwing a little bit more inside. I know that if it's not comfortable for you, if you haven't done it, but if I was looking to extend my time, if I think, wow, I might be showing age here, I probably want to start working a little bit more inside. Is that just a hard thing for these guys to do at this point in their careers?
Maybe, but maybe not. I mean, look at Glav. You know who used to throw inside late in their career all the time? Was Jamie Moyer. Jamie Moyer couldn't throw harder than 78 on his fastball.
And he pitched for 37 years, Jeff.
He did. He did. And it was effective. And so my point is, it's obviously knowing how to pitch inside. You can't just let it go when you have no idea where it's going to go. But I said it today, Will Smith hit Soto. Whether you like to believe it was on purpose or whether it's not, the fact of the matter is he went in, and you know what? Maybe next time when he faces him, he'll have a little bit of that, oh, man, I'm not sure exactly where to go. And I've said that. Tyler Matzek, some of those guys, let that big fastball go, and, gosh, you'd open up the whole outside part of the play.
Can't say it enough. I don't know if it's a mindset. I don't know if guys are a little bit afraid. But if I was at a point where it looks like they're not really trusting me very much, I'm going to make guys a little bit uncomfortable. I want to ask you about a guy who was on the mound last night. John Lester picked up his 200th win. And I'm of the belief that Max Scherzer is the meanest guy in baseball. Just when he's on the mound, he's the meanest. But John Lester might be like a 1A. I don't know how many times you faced him or how much – I know you know him. Can you talk about what that guy's personality on and off the mound is and what kind of switch he flips?
Well, it's funny because Scherzer's like that competitive. I want to, like, you know, emotional. I want to rip your head off. Lester gives you the looks like I'm actually gonna kill you. You know, like he's all business. Mm-hmm. He never smiles. You know, this is a guy that, you know, we play golf with during the off season here in Atlanta. But you would get up to the plate and he would just deadpan you the whole time. Would never even look. And I'll be honest, when the Cardinals got him and Jay Happ, I think everybody thought, oh, wow, what the heck? But those two guys have really solidified the back end of that rotation for the Cardinals, who've won 9 of 10 and sit three games up in the wild card. And
you know,
the idea that he was able to do what he's done for 200 wins is incredible.
He's a horse, and there weren't a lot of them left. I can tell you somebody who covers that team, and I think you know the guy that I know up there. They needed a little bit of an attitude adjustment because Schilt sort of played the, hey, look at me, I'm kind of a little bit of a tough guy. I'm going to go take a baseball out of a game. I'm going to go look at a bat. But I think in the clubhouse, John Lester was the perfect guy to bring into the clubhouse to just say, I'm not going to tell you how to be tough. I'm just going to walk around here and show you what tough looks like.
Yeah, I think between him and Arenado, I think those are the two guys. I think Arenado plays with a chip on his shoulder when he's out there. You're seeing a little, to me, meaner version of the Cardinals, if you could say that. And you know what? It's driven them. And I'll tell you what, right now, whether they play the Dodgers or Giants, the way Adam Wainwright's pitching right now, I'll tell you what, that's going to be no easy task for a one-game playoff for one of those teams.
Finishing up with Jeff Francoeur on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. Did you have a chance to watch the 30 for 30 on the Mets?
I did, man. Incredible.
It's really one of the most incredible pieces of filmmaking you'll ever see. How much, when you were up there, was that team talked about to the day that maybe not a lot of people even remembered them?
Well, I'll tell you what, Howard Johnson was our hitting coach, and I used to sit there and try to get him to tell me stories about the 86 Mets. And he told me some that would blow your socks off if I would actually be able to tell it on air, which was incredible. But, you know, it was, you know, Gooden would come in, Strawberry'd come in. These guys would always come in. They're loved up there. You know, Ron Darling, obviously, you know, Keith Hernandez. These guys are still part of it. But, I mean, I think it's just great because, I mean, they just had this attitude about themselves. And they didn't care what anybody else thought. And there was great personality. And I think that's what we talk about in the game today. These fans want to know the players. They want to feel like they can get to know them. And I think there might not be any team that, you know, showed that more than them. I mean, they were who they were. And like I said, it's one of the better documentaries I've ever seen. I thought it was very in-depth. I thought everybody was very honest, you know, even to a fault sometimes. But what a job.
Do you think you could dirtbag your way through a season as a team in this day and age? Can you be that version of this of a team in Major League Baseball?
No chance. Yeah. Not with Instagram and Twitter.
Right.
No way.
There's a good chance 3/4 of that team would have been on the front of the post every other week.
So here's the problem for baseball. You want personality, and you think pimping a home run is personality. No, that's kind of personality. This is you need to be hated. And it was the other thing that baseball lacks at times. It's easy to say people hate the Yankees. It's easy to say that. They're not even very hateable. You know, they're really not very hateable. Baseball would love, they'd love two things. They'd love people to bet on it like they bet on football. And they would love for it to be, oh, my God, there are five teams in baseball that are truly hated. It's tough to do it. It's really tough to do it in this sport.
It is. The villain, the whole idea of that, you know, is kind of tough. Most people want the more of the, you know, clean cut, nice guy thing. But I mean, I still think, look, you're going to have your few guys in the game, but you're not going to have the team like you did to have that kind of personality and do, you know, go about their business the way they did. And that's why I think it was such a great documentary that people could see kind of behind the scenes what really went on with that team.
To me, the most amazing on the field aspect of that was how many pitchers, even though they were struggling, stayed in games. They didn't take guys out of games back then.
No, they didn't. You were gonna wear it, and you were gonna go out there and do it. And that's why, I mean, the game's changed so much from that aspect. But I think it's just a good reminder of, you know, the game's great now. I love the game the way it is now. But the game was great then too. And so I think everything, you know, can kind of be put into different eras that you're in. And that was a great one back in '86.
You know what I liked about it? I don't know who it was, but somebody said it might have been Sid Fernandez. He said Bobby Ojeda was the key to the whole thing. And you go, Bobby Ojeda. How the hell was he the key to the whole thing? But it's really what happens in the course of a season when the dynamic of the clubhouse might change a little bit because somebody all of a sudden does get a little
bit
more
ballsy. How about he flies to where? D.C. and comes back, gets the shot in D.C. to numb his arm and pitches in the postseason with his arm essentially hanging off his body.
I know. Wasn't it awesome?
I think he flew commercial.
So many incredible stories.
I think he flew commercial, too, by the way.
That's what I told Hojo told me about half the story. He said the other half. I don't even know if you want to know these.
And Jeff,
that's beautiful.
Well, we got to get together and have a few beers and have you share those stories.
Yeah, I got some good ones. I mean, Daryl and Gooden, they'd come in. I'm telling you, it was awesome.
How about the fact they trade a future MVP in Kevin Mitchell because they think he's the problem?
Yep.
Lenny Dykstra, of all people, is telling you, Kevin Mitchell wasn't the problem. He didn't drink, he didn't smoke, he didn't do anything.
I guess that when that was the problem, right?
Yeah.
Jeez.
That's true.
If they stay together, who knows? Jeff Francoeur, always a great conversation. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, guys.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.